This week on the Jock and Nerd podcast, we review Alex Garland's Civil War, plus reactions to the Joker sequel trailer, announcements from this year's CinemaCon, quick thoughts on the latest episodes of X-Men 97, Shogun, and more, all in this edition of the Jock and Nerd Weekly for Monday, April 15th, 2024.
This is Norm MacDonald, and you're listening to the, hang on, I got it here. It says, the Jock and Nerd Podcast, known for their series of gay erotica found on Amazon, huh? No? That's not them? Oh. Well, I fucked that up, I guess. Check. Check one. All right. This is Roy fans out there. Let's give it up. Hey, 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 what's up, listener? Thanks for pressing play, and welcome to the Jock and Nerd Podcast, where we give you comic book and superhero TV and movie news, reviews, and whatever we choose.
Jock and Nerd!
My name is Imran.
My name's Anthony.
He's the jock.
He's the nerd.
And joining us, a fella who is constantly asking you what kind of American you are. He's the Jefferson Davis to my Abraham Lincoln. It's Rug Boy. What's up, Rugs? Did you get that one? That was a deep cut Civil War.
Oh, really?
Reference.
Oh.
Not really a deep
cut. What kind of American are you, Andrew?
What kind of an American are you, Rugs?
I'm a felty American.
Oh, they shoot them on sight in this country.
I'm an Americunt. I don't know.
You keep the felties in the underneath, in the ground. I don't know.
That's right. I'm the worst kind of American. I'm a felty American.
It's a felty American. They have feelings and rights too. Anyways, Anthony, how you doing?
Oh, I'm all right. Thanks for asking.
Okay. I just want to make sure you're alive.
I'm here.
He's there.
You know, he's fine, Imran.
I know, but you know, sometimes it's nice to have somebody ask you, how you doing?
I wonder. Yeah. The listeners are probably like, I wonder how Anthony's doing.
I think they were wondering. And now we know. With that, let's move on. We got a movie to review and a bunch of geek news to go over. Let's hit it.
The Jock and Nerd Podcast.
All of this week's news coming from this year's CinemaCon in the Las Vegas.
What is CinemaCon?
I believe it's like a convention for theater exhibitors and movies and vendors who sell candy and popcorn and stuff to theaters, and they show you. It's become kind of like almost like a Comic-Con where studios will come with packages to show you sneak peeks. Sometimes a little bit of a movie, a couple minutes, 9-10 minutes, sometimes a half an hour, sometimes a whole movie early to exhibitors.
So is this to try and like get theater spots?
I think so. This is
like
all
we're going to give you like 3 rooms when you open this movie or something.
I believe this is all like the insider business convention for theaters and theater owners. So they got to book the spots, get the movies, get the theaters to take their movie and stuff. But I believe there's like a lot of junk food vendors too, which I didn't realize that I've been hearing. That sounds like fun. I'd go to a junk food. I don't know. But so we got a bunch of trailers, bunch of descriptions, bunch of announcements. Some are kind of exciting. I picked out a couple to highlight. We're not going to go over everything. We'll go over some of the things. The first thing on the first day, Warner Brothers presentation put out their first trailer for the Joker sequel, Joker Folie à Deux. I think that's how you say it, right?
Folie à Deux.
With the Lady Gaga.
That's right.
Let's just dive in. Anthony, you got to look at this trailer. What did you think?
I did look at it.
Didn't do anything for you?
No, to be honest, it really didn't do anything for me. I know the first movie's pretty good. It's just, you know, it's a copy of Taxi Driver.
King of Comedy.
Kings of Comedy. But it's well done. It's a good Joker. Kind of a pretty decent Joker movie. I don't know. It's okay. I just don't... I'm not, like, the biggest fan of... Lady Gaga.
The Gaga. Is this movie necessary? Really?
Yeah, I just don't know that the... I think they kind of... They hit on the first one. I'm sure there's plenty of Joker stories to tell. I don't know that I... After that first one, I was like, let's keep going with this. Especially since this isn't really going to connect with Batman, I don't think.
Yeah, I think the first one was like wrapped in the mystique of like something terrible happening when you went to the theater. Like there was all these people talking about like it's like an incel movie.
Right, right.
There was all this like now that that's passed. I don't know if it's going to have as much of a zeitgeist moment that it had last time.
Well, that may be why they're kind of trying something different, as you see in this trailer. There's the shot. I mean, it's very tonally. It looks like the first one. There's some beautiful shots. We see Arthur Fleck in Arkham Asylum, and then he sees Harlequin, who is also an inmate in this, not the psychiatrist. Thought that was interesting. But some beautiful shots, beautiful photography. I love the way the trailer ends with her drawing that lipstick on the mirror, and then it goes out of focus and he smiles right into the lipstick. It's fucking fantastic. So the first one, of course, made for like $50 to $70 million, goes on to make $1 billion. Of course they're going to make a second one, even though I don't think they were planning to initially. And they were like, oh shit, the budget reportedly $200 million.
Oh shit.
I think it's because they had to get all those songs.
Yes. The other thing that came out before this trailer is that they've been calling this a jukebox musical. Apparently there's renditions of 15 like known songs, 15 cover songs in this movie. It's not a musical, but clearly music is going to be really
kind of like Moulin Rouge.
Yes.
Did.
That is a jukebox musical where you use songs to tell the story. But it's not a musical where everybody's singing, if that makes any sense.
I think people are going to be singing, though. I mean, Lady Gaga, she's going to sing.
I like that Gaga. I kind of was digging this. It has the same aesthetic and the feel. And you notice how, like, there are shots where he's walking. And I think a lot of this, how much of this do you think is in their head? Because he's walking with those umbrellas and it's raining and he looks up and, like, the umbrellas are in color. You see them dancing two different settings, and so I'm like, is all the music stuff gonna be their psychotic hallucination? Well,
yeah, wasn't he hallucinating a lot in the first movie?
Was Zazie Beetz wasn't really talking to him, and he thought he had a whole relationship with her, didn't he?
Yeah.
I don't see any other Scorsese movies he's ripping off in this one. Maybe he's ripping off something else. What do you think? Does this look like
Moulin Rouge?
He's ripping off Moulin Rouge now.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't need this movie, but I was like, I don't know what the fuck this movie is going to be, but this trailer has got me intrigued.
It's kind of a weird thing. This Joker shouldn't exist. And so Todd Phillips is just playing around with his character and using like a great actor to do it. I mean, he looks gaunt and he's really skinny like he was in the first one.
Yeah. He looks creepy as fuck.
Yeah. Joaquin Phoenix is just a powerhouse. He can command the screen. He can take you wherever you need to go. So, and Stephanie Germanotta, a.k.a. Lady Gaga.
She's good. She's a good actor.
She's not too bad. There's worse actors than her.
I mean, the couple things I've seen her in, she really pulls it off. I would be nice if they do, if it's the story is kind of like, what's that one with Woody Harrelson and Natural Born Killers? Right, just the journey of these two psychotics.
That's the movie that they're going to be making.
They might be just making a musical version of Natural Born Killers, which also featured like a lot of songs.
Yes,
but man, the budget's crazy, and apparently, first 24 hours, 167 million views of this trailer, which was more than Barbie got when that came out. So, I don't know. I don't know if it'll make another $1 billion.
Like, it's weird because we don't have high expectations for this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't.
You don't need it.
So it's either we go and we're pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
Or we're like, we hate it right off the bat, even more than we hate the idea of a second Joker movie.
It's all going to depend on their chemistry and the writing. And like the trailer really doesn't give away a lot of the plot. So we will see coming out this October. I got a half geek boner. Listener, let us know what you think. Join our Facebook group. It's called Jock and Nerd Nation.
Jock and Nerd.
There's a link in the episode description. It is an exclusive closed group just for you. You could have responded to this trailer. Let us your thoughts. Talk about it with other listeners. Lots of fun stuff. Okay, moving on. Lionsgate, one thing. That movie Ballerina, remember? The John Wick spinoff with Ana de Armas. So apparently Keanu is in the movie because it takes place between John Wick 3 and 4. So, and I think Winston is in the movie also. They showed a little bit. So,
oh, wow. I did not expect that.
Yeah. I don't know how much he's going to be in the movie, but Anthony, does that make you any more excited for a John Wick spinoff?
What are you talking about? No, I'm just kidding. The Ballerina's in the movie?
Ballerina is the name of the spinoff.
Oh, it's about those Russian, the
yes.
Russian.
Yes. Yeah. Ana de Armas is the lead. She's the ballerina, who's also an assassin.
Hey, if it has the action that John Wick has, that we're accustomed to, that innovative, brutal action, then I'm in. If it doesn't have that, it's not a John Wick film, and you can't.
But Keanu's in it. It's John Wick's in it. He's gonna be in
there
it.
There you go. I'm in.
Okay.
I'm in.
Ana de Armas,
doesn't take much.
She kicks ass. She can kick ass. Okay, moving on. Paramount had a bunch of crazy announcements. First of all, Gladiator 2, this movie's still coming out. You guys remember this? Stacked cast, lots of crazy people. Did you hear about any of the description of the footage they showed?
No, what happened?
No.
Apparently it was pretty good. Maybe a little CGI heavy. Dudes on rhinos. There's hordes of baboons that they're fighting. Balloon baboons. There's sharks. There's naval battles. Apparently they do this thing where, and I think they did this, somebody said ancient Greece, they would fill the Colosseum with water and fill it with sharks and have people fight on ships or something like that. It sounds fucking nuts. But
are you serious?
Yeah. Something like that. There was sharks and rhinos.
In the Colosseum.
In the Colosseum.
Sharks.
Yes.
Well, rhinos, yes. Sharks, I feel like, I don't know. I mean, they had nothing better to do back then.
I know, right? No, I think someone can look it up and they will find that they used to fill the Colosseum.
No,
back
they
then
did
with
do
water.
Naval battles, but yeah. How far did it happen? I don't know.
I could
how
totally
deep could they get it filled up?
I don't think you got to fill it in that deep. I could totally see them doing that. I mean, Godzilla can sleep in it. You can put some sharks in there. Plenty of room. So
now I got to look this up.
Yeah, definitely look it up because I think it is historical fact, or I'm just making shit up, which is what you do on a podcast. So I'm excited for Gladiator 2. We'll see Ridley Scott coming back to Gladiator.
What is the? I know we might have talked about this, but what's the concept here?
Oh, so okay. So I got a little bit of the story from the description. Paul Mescal is the lead guy, and I think he is a soldier who did something and they forced him to be a gladiator, and he's like inspired by Maximus. But Connie Nielsen also is in this second movie, which makes it confusing. So I don't know if it's any direct relation to these characters. It's just a guy.
Well, it's probably Rome is Rome and whoever was in charge or those families are still there. It's just not the same gladiator. It's
right.
A different gladiator.
Right. And they're still gladiators. So it's just going to be, which is fine. Like, that's a good idea. Another gladiator inspired by the stories of Russell Crowe's Gladiator. But you got Denzel Washington, Barry Keoghan, Pedro Pascal, Joseph Quinn, Paul Mescal, Connie Nielsen. A crazy cast.
I'm interested. Now you mentioned that doing like, I would never have thought that they would do the water shit.
Right.
In the Colosseum.
Yeah.
I've heard stories of it, but like, I was like, can that even be done? But I would like to see how they do it.
It's going
to
be wild. Hopefully like the CG is good and it's not too CG. That was some of the complaints of the footage was like the overuse of CG, but it may not be done. So we don't know. Next bit from Paramount. This is kind of interesting. Edgar Wright is directing a new adaptation of Stephen King's The Running Man.
Oh,
and Glenn Powell is set to be the star of the movie. Apparently, Glenn Powell beat out Chris Evans, Ryan Gosling, and Chris Hemsworth.
Wow.
And he's going to be more faithful to the book, which I don't think the Schwarzenegger Running Man. I think they took a lot of liberties.
Comedy.
Yes. I don't think. And I think the lead guy is just more of like an everyman schlub and not like a Schwarzenegger type.
No, Sub-Zero, Plane Zero.
But I think you can make another version and that movie can still be its own thing and you can take it a different way, right? We've seen them kind of do that with other things.
I hope you leave enough room for my fist because I'm going to ram it in your throat.
And it's Edgar.
Ram it in your goddamn spine.
So good.
Ram it in your stomach and break your goddamn spine.
I need to watch that again.
But doesn't he signs the thing and then staples it on the guy's back or something?
Yeah.
That's a great movie. I like that movie a lot.
That movie's great.
Does it make you mad that they're going to remake it? No, right? Because it's Edgar Wright and he could do something else.
Oh, let me defer to Ruggs. Yeah, what do you think about them remaking this one?
I mean, I don't know. I think that this concept is not a new concept, the Running Man.
Yeah.
Like, we've seen multiple, like, reality game shows where you have to, like, you know, survive being hunted or whatever.
Yeah.
So I think, all right, there's been so many of these. What's another one? It doesn't offend me that much. If they were to, like, do, like, redo
Roadhouse,
Total Recall,
which they did,
that was horrible. Yeah. Like, that wasn't even close.
But the RoboCop one also was not,
it was not good.
It was not good. So
it wasn't a bad movie. It was just PG-13. They couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
So it ruined that movie too. So I don't know. It's none of them have actually been good. So,
but they could tap into like a reality show thing right now with this, and it could be a lot of fun.
I think Running Man versus, when I'm thinking about this versus Roadhouse is so of its time. Running Man is a little bit too, just because it has Arnold. But I actually think there's enough meat on the bone to do a different kind of Running Man, yeah, and it be valid, like a worthy addition to the movie sphere.
Yeah.
You can't go as far away from doing Arnold because it'll just be a cheap imitation. But if you go make it something Edgar Wrighty in Running Man,
and make it
that's the thing. Yeah. Stephen King and Edgar Wright together, is that great. A good mix?
I think it could be great. Like, so all he has to do is make it like more faithful to the book.
Some would have said. If we knew who Stephen King was, some would have said Stephen King and Arnold. Is that a good mix?
No, that's true.
That's true.
Well, touche.
That worked out okay.
I think it only worked out because it was Arnold. God,
Arnold was Running Man is such a fun movie.
Running Man is such a fun movie.
But
I think it. It sounds like I'm saying the same things about Running Man than I am about Roadhouse, but I feel like it's not the same as Roadhouse.
It's not.
No. I think, well, look, Running Man is not the most popular Arnold movie, even though it's a good one.
Yeah.
No one's like clamoring to remake Raw Deal. Remake one of his shit movies. Right? Like not like one of his better ones.
That's why I think it's a good pick for, it's just like, it's just shit enough to, it can be redone a different way.
Yeah,
it's like his mid tier stuff.
Yeah.
But if you watch Running Man, you'll go, "Oh fuck, why wasn't this?" This was just another one of his bangers back then. It was just another one.
Fucking Richard Dawson, right? That was Richard.
Yeah. First of all, Running Man has great one liners.
Yeah,
it does.
Arnold is jacked as fuck in that movie. Yes. And and Richard Dawson's the bad guy.
Richard fucking Dawson. It's amazing.
I love when there's a line. I'm looking at his lines right now. One of the dudes gets lit on fire and he goes, "What a hothead."
It's great. You don't. Yeah. But yeah, just don't do any of that. And
you can't do that. If you do that, you got to do it. You got to do it in a way that's you can't do it. Actually, never mind. You got to do something else.
Glenn Powell is fine. I find him a little generic, but he's hot right now, man. He's going to be in Twisters. He was in that rom-com with Sydney Sweeney.
Yeah, he is pretty big right now.
But he's like so
generic. Edgar Wright thing makes it a little more interesting.
Yes, love the Edgar Wright. Okay, moving on. Here is a sentence I'd never thought I'd utter out loud, a combination of words that I'm just surprised are together. Paramount is going to make a new live-action R-rated Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie based on the comic series The Last Ronin.
Oh, shit. Geek boner.
I like this. That's a weird combination of words. I like all of them.
Well, the Turtles initially were kind of dark.
They were.
When they came out.
Yes,
they were.
Yeah.
Then they were...
Wasn't exactly for kids.
Yeah, then they were kiddied up. I mean, if you mean kids were reading comic books with girls with humongous boobs being right. exposed yeah. all the time. No, it wasn't for kids. But I think this series went back to its roots, the last Ronin, and yeah. kind of tried to recapture some of that.
Walter Hamada is producing this. I want to read this. It's set in a bleak dystopian future in which Oroku Hiroto, the grandson of Shredder, rules New York, and he's killed all of the turtles except for, I think it's Raphael, as well as Splinter. And I forget, I think it's Raphael. And Raphael goes to get revenge and fuck shit up. I love this idea. I love the story. Live action is crazy. Now, you know, those suits in the first movie are amazing. I don't want you to do suits, but I feel like it should look like, what if it looked like it was a
but
suit?
Why can't they do suits?
Why not? I know.
It seems like it'd be perfect time to do a suit again.
I mean, with the technology now, you could probably make amazing fucking animatronic suits heads.
I think we have servos that are smaller now. Yeah, we have more.
Well, they use them at Disney World all the time for all those fucking things.
Yeah.
They have a robot Spider-Man that flies through the air and does flips. Give me a suit with a instead, because you know they're going to do the CG stuff, and I did not like the last CG models in those Michael Bay movies with the noses. That didn't make any sense.
Yeah, the CG was not good in those movies, although people do kind of like the way the turtles were portrayed, especially in the second one.
Yeah.
When I first saw this, I was like, this is actually kind of cool.
Yeah.
I'm into seeing what they do with an R-rated Turtles movie, because as Ruggs mentioned, it's the roots, while silly yeah. in terms of the concept, were actually a very dark comic.
Yeah.
So I'd like to see, and it's not something we've seen before. The first movie gets a little dark, but they don't go all the way with it.
Well, when you're talking about anything with a katana sword, you're going to behead someone.
Yes.
Right. And you're chopping blood. Arms off.
Yes. There needs to be blood.
Like, yeah, you're not, these are all, you know, hurting weapons that cause major damage. And the fact that these cartoons are able to skirt that issue so long, it's kind of ridiculous. But I'd like to see what happens when you get hit in the eye with a psi.
Oh my God, right through the, I mean, Raphael's got two pointy fucking sharp ass objects. This sounds amazing. I was all, yeah, when I saw, I was like, fuck yeah, let's do this. Yeah, you know what? Dude, this is completely something different. Something I never thought I'd see. R-rated live action turtles. That's great. Bring it on. This next thing is also, maybe I'm not as excited, but it is crazy. Paramount is going to do a Transformers G.I. Joe crossover live action.
Jesus.
Which was Brian Goff in the Facebook group reminds us that they did tease this at the end of Rise of the Beasts.
Right.
I remember that. There's a business card. I was like, oh, shit. I don't know how I feel about this because the G.I. Joe movies are not good. The Transformers movies range from good to not good.
I didn't think that they were terrible. I just think that they did Cobra Commander dirty in the first one. But
wasn't The Rock in that also, right?
Yeah, he was like Roadblock or something. I don't remember.
That's not how you do the Joe, this G.I. Joe. I don't. Could this work?
The thing at G.I. Joe, the biggest problem is there's too many characters.
There's a lot of characters.
There's like G.I. Joe is an army.
Yeah.
And there's just so you're always going to like shaft somebody that might be somebody's favorite character. Like, why isn't Tunnel Rat in this? Why isn't Firefly in this one? So like you're gonna shaft a bunch of people's favorite characters, but if you can figure out, like, there's a lot of Transformers, there's a lot of G.I. Joes, there's a lot of, I don't know, there's a lot of people who be fighting for screen time here. But it's a lot like Godzilla and Kong. You get these two big properties and you cross them over.
You're gonna have dozens of fucking characters in this movie. How are you balancing this?
I don't know. That's the key.
It also is kind of just weird, because the interactions, or it just doesn't seem to add up. You've got human characters and giant robots.
Well, you could go, okay, so they G.I. Joe has to now deal with the fact that there's aliens on the planet and they got to go and check it out.
Oh, maybe. I guess there was a Marvel Comics series in the 80s that they're going to base this on. I kind of remember that.
Oh, yeah. They cross over everything in comics.
Yeah. It was G.I. Joe and Transformers. But they tried to make a Snake Eyes movie, and you would think you could make Snake Eyes one of the dopest G.I. Joe characters, and I'm hearing that movie is not good. But if you fuck up Snake Eyes, how are you going to make a whole fucking...
All they had to do is stick to the cartoon. It would have been cool.
Yeah.
But whatever.
Yeah. This is going to sound like I'm hypocritical because I love Godzilla versus Kong, except you know, not as much the last one, but I like the idea.
Yeah.
But anytime you go with a crossover, usually that's a bad sign for the
creators. Freddy versus Jason.
Yeah, it's usually Freddy, when
Alien versus Predator.
Yeah, it never. Yeah, when they're reaching.
Usually that means hey, we've run out of ideas.
That's a good point.
And we are wanting to spark this franchise. Now it's different when like a Godzilla versus Kong. They knew they were doing a crossover,
right?
Pretty soon, and your Marvel stuff. They know they're crossing over. But when it's two different franchises, and you go fuck, we're out of ideas, or fuck, we're not making any money. Let's cross them over. Usually isn't a good thing.
Yeah, historically, that has not played out well. That is a very good point. I think that's probably what's going to happen. It's going
to
be a
that's exactly what's happening.
I feel like it's got a chance because I hate to say it, but people still watch the Transformers movies.
Look, Bumblebee is great.
Like, what was the box office for that last piece
of
shit?
Rise of the Beasts was okay.
Godzilla and Kong is now at, like, what, 400,000, 400 million, sorry?
Rise of the Beasts was 157 domestic, 281 international for a total of 438. Oh,
well, so it's making the same as Godzilla versus Kong pretty much.
Yeah.
Godzilla versus Kong is already more domestic and right at it worldwide, 437.
Yeah, and more domestic. Interesting.
More domestic already. About
so that's almost enough to justify keeping this thing going.
Well, yeah, if they can do what Godzilla versus Kong is doing, it might be enough.
Have some fun with it.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to do it, it better just be a lot of fun to watch.
Oh my God.
Don't.
But you're talking about, so I'm saying, like, the Transformers have been done to death and people are still going and still box officing like 400 mil. So it's kind of like, it's still not dead.
No.
Yeah. Right. Even though, like, I have no interest in seeing them. I barely like watch them out just out of curiosity sometimes, but
I'm just thinking of how like 10-year-old me would be losing his shit right now because I had all those toys. You told me you're going to see this on the movie live action crossed over. Get the fuck out of here.
Are they going to get Channing Tatum again?
Oh, to wait for what?
He was Duke.
He was in it.
Oh, see, I never
The Rock was also
the Rock
in
I remember The Rock. I don't think I saw one and I don't
Bruce remember. Willis was. You think
he'll
be in
shit,
it?
Oh shit. No. No, he's not in it.
I don't think he's going to be in anything.
Was that too soon?
Yeah, too soon. Anyways, let's move on to
son of a bitch. Someone feed him his lines.
The last studio here is Disney. And they showed a bunch of footage and stuff. I just want to start with they showed the logo for the Fantastic Four movie. I love it. I put it in here. It's classic. It reminds me of a comic book. It's so great. And then they show the logo for the Thunderbolts. And Feige confirms the asterisk at the end of this movie. It is Thunderbolts asterisk. But what I didn't really like is this font, this treatment of Thunderbolts. It is in a very plain, thin, uninspired fucking font. It's really strange.
Limp.
It's very limp, right? Like a movie called Thunderbolts asterisk, and they choose just this. I don't like this font. I don't know. What do you guys think comparing these two logos?
We're doing it. We're going to use Verdana. No,
whatever that is. It's like
this is what we've come down to with Marvel is we're looking at
fonts. It's important.
The Fantastic Four one is nice. It's creative. The Thunderbolts one, I mean, it's, you know, you're looking at probably the least creative one they've ever put out.
Yeah.
In terms of font. But, you know, and you'd imagine a title Thunderbolts that just lends itself to different creativity, but
none of it's there.
No.
It used to be like there. A 3D carved out of rock logo, remember? They changed it to this, and I'm like, boo. Look, at least it's not papyrus. I'm looking at you, Avatar. but it may be some other built-in font, and that's annoying. Okay, so they showed Captain America Brave New World clips. Did you guys read? Do we? You want a little bit of description? It's not very spoilery.
I'll give you go for it.
Mild spoiler alerts. It was a clip featuring Harrison Ford, President Thunderbolt Ross, talking to Sam, essentially asking him for his help in rebuilding the Avengers. And then I believe there was a clip of Isaiah Bradley getting activated because he's a Winter Soldier and attacking the president. And I think it's probably still Carl Laemmle, right, who played him in the original in the series, Falcon and Winter Soldier. And Kevin Feige said he's got to say this, but he said it's more of a grounded political thriller similar to Winter Soldier, which is a good thing to say. And then there's a photo here from Entertainment Weekly of Harrison Ford. First of all, seeing Harrison Ford as the president in an MCU movie is kind of awesome right there. I don't know why. I was like, holy shit.
That is cool.
Right?
I think they make like an inside joke too about
his mustache.
Yeah, and how he looks different.
Yeah. With the mustache, he looks like William Hurt. Without the mustache, he looks like Harrison Ford.
That's how that goes.
Yeah. what do you guys think of all that in this little photo here? Do anything for you?
No, I mean, it's not really showing you that much. So
yeah, I mean, I can't really analyze the photo. I did read the recap of what it sounds or what they're doing in the clips they showed. I do like the feel, or I like the thought of it being more like a Winter Soldier movie. Yeah,
that's good.
That's probably what they need to lean into.
Yes.
The idea of Isaiah Bradley being activated and tacking also seems like a cool thing. So we'll see. I mean, there's been a lot of negative stuff about this movie in terms of reshoots and all that stuff. And
they're still reshooting this movie, by the way.
Yeah. Like, okay.
Like
so,
currently this year.
So I'm curious to see how it plays out. I'm glad they got rid of the bad suit he was wearing.
Oh yeah. With the white one and the shit. Yeah. It looks good in the comics, but, it's less work. Also, they had to retouch all that shit because it was all folding up.
Yeah, I think also one of the big issues is I think there was a lot of excitement for Falcon. What's his name?
Anthony Mackie.
What's the character's
name?
Sam Wilson as the Falcon after Avengers Endgame. But then that show really kind of stunted that momentum. Yeah. You know, it didn't make sense, right? He gets the shield at the end of Endgame and thinks it's an honor. And, you know, and wants it. And he's like, I'll take it. You know, I'll do my best. And then at the start of this show, he's like, I don't want it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to give it to the government. And it's like, well, that doesn't make any sense. And then he gets it back. And we're told later on that Rhodey's not Rhodey. But he does this whole speech at the end that's just way on the nose. Is not subtle at all. So just it kind of killed the momentum for him being Falcon. And then he had that stupid suit. You know, it's just...
Yeah, I just think Captain America chose him.
Yeah.
He should have just not showed up as he'd be the new Cap.
It just doesn't make sense why they went the route of him being like, no, I don't want it. After the end of the movie in Endgame, he's like, yeah, I want it. I'll take it. Like, I'm so honored. Thank you.
But Isaiah Bradley is a super soldier, has the serum. He doesn't have any powers, does he?
No, he doesn't.
Should they give him this? Should they give him the serum? Wouldn't he be like, hey, I'm going to need to even this playing field a little bit. Can I have a little bit of the juice?
Yeah, that's another thing that's a little... I mean, I don't know how they do it in the comics. Maybe he doesn't. I'm not familiar.
He's got the wings and the wingsuit and maybe an exoskeleton. Yeah. I don't know how they do it. You're right. I don't know.
Yeah, it's just odd.
Yeah.
The whole Falcon and Winter Soldier thing, I think, really stunted a lot of the momentum for this. And then you go... I know they're rewriting it, but then you take the Falcon and Winter Soldier writer initially and you go, hey, you did a great job. Now write this movie. And it goes, well why?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's going to be.
We'll see, though.
Yeah. That's not till next year. And then the big stuff here, Deadpool and Wolverine. Apparently, they did a cute thing at the beginning of the presentation telling people to turn their phones off and they were swearing at them. They showed 9 minutes of Deadpool and Wolverine. With Logan in his yellow costume, and I think it was just kind of like that birthday party scene. You can read it online. I don't want to spoil too much, but safe to say, this is what I was glad in hearing, is that it doesn't look like Marvel Disney is sanitizing this much, and it leans in to its R-ratedness. Lots of swearing.
Well, at this point, Disney and Hulu are together, and you can watch crazy-ass shit on Disney now that is inappropriate. Right.
That's
there.
True.
So, like, I don't think they have to really worry about that anymore.
It's wild, though, that we're going to get an R-rated Marvel movie. I'm super excited. Did you guys read the description of the footage? Do you want to know what it was?
Yeah, hit us.
All right, again, a little spoiler alert. I'm just going to paraphrase from this Variety article. It says, there was lines in it like, suck it, Fox, I'm going to Disneyland. Get fucked. Apparently, Wolverine swears a lot at the end in the clip. So it starts out of him. Wade is now a used car salesman, and he doesn't want to be a superhero anymore. He has that little birthday party, and then Mr. Paradox, who's played by Matthew McFadden from the TVA, comes to him needing his help, telling him he's going to put him in the main sacred timeline. And then I think that's like the beginning of the movie that we saw in the trailer. And then there's a whole tirade by Wolverine just swearing, and they're talking about pegging and cocaine and all sorts of fun stuff. And I was like, this is fucking crazy. It sounds so perfectly vulgar for Deadpool. And I can't wait to see how he fucking digs on his own bosses and his former bosses. Does this get you more geek boner, less geek boner?
Geek boner. I think it's going to be fun.
Flopping jock. No.
Floppy jock.
I think it'll be good. I think the novelty of all of this being, you know, you watch this and you'll go, oh, this is now part of Disney and the MCU. I think that'll be fun. They have enough with Wolverine coming back, the yellow suit. Hopefully it's a good story, though. Hopefully it's something that we can sink our teeth into, and while we can laugh the entire time, it's something we can also connect with.
I'm interested in seeing how much of a two-hander this is.
You know that term?
For jerking off, Imran?
Two-hander. Yeah, you know, like when Donald Trump dances in the two-hander. No, a two-hander in like movie terms is a movie where you have two kind of equally lead actors. Like, this Hugh Jackman, he's not coming in for a cameo, right? I'm curious how much screen time they will both share. Will it be equal? But it sounds like their chemistry together is going to be great. And I can't wait to see all the cameos. And maybe it doesn't make $1 billion. I know I said that it was going to make two. I don't know anymore.
Oh, not a lot, two.
Maybe one.
We talked about this, but the billion, that'll be tough.
I don't think we're going to get billions anymore.
Well, but yeah, we've had a few, but we went over it. Like, you know, in 2019, there was like 9 movies that hit $1 billion.
Right.
And cut to last year where there was like 2, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way the trends are now. I think it'll do well. There's a lot riding on this movie for Marvel, obviously. But fuck, this is the first R-rated, sweary Marvel fucking superhero movie. I cannot fucking wait for July. Okay, they also showed 13 minutes of Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. And all the reporting I saw said that the fucking CG looks amazing. Like, that it's just better and better every movie.
It does look great.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, we haven't seen the clips, but the trailers we've seen thus far, it looks great. I love Planet of the Apes, the way they've done these new ones. So I'm all in.
I can't wait for this one. It'll be our third ape movie of the year after Godzilla, X Kong, Monkey Man, Kingdom, Planet of the Apes.
I already forgot Monkey Man.
I'm a monkey. I don't even need to see those clips. Just show me the movie that's coming out later. This looks fucking amazing. So I know Andy Serkis is, worked on the mocap and stuff, helping the character actors. That looks fucking dope. Last thing mentioned, they showed a sneak peek of Alien Romulus. And again, like when we saw the trailer, we're like, oh, that looks interesting. They showed scenes of face huggers, chest bursting aliens, very gory, lots of practical effects, people walking away going, holy shit, this actually looks really amazing. Did not expect this. Just like after watching that teaser, I was like, oh, this is good. Going back to the roots. So I'm excited. That looks good.
Yeah.
A lot of movies that look like other movies that you've seen.
Sure. That's what you got to do these days.
Sure.
sequels, and they showed other stuff, but that's all the stuff I thought was interesting from CinemaCon. Final thoughts on any of that? I don't know. Does this seem like more, less stuff than normal? I think next year is going to be huge.
I feel it's kind of limp, to be honest with you. Like,
overall,
Fantastic Four, I'm very enthused about. I'm just like, okay, like, we've been waiting this long. And it does. I mean, it sounds fine, but like, I'm not really excited about it. The G.I. Joe Transformers sounds like it's gonna bomb. The Ninja Turtles thing could be cool.
R-rated Ninja Turtles, very exciting.
Yeah, I mean, the ballerina could be cool now that I know that Keanu's gonna be in it. So they're really gonna try and tie it in.
Yeah, Gladiator 2. That looks interesting.
Gladiator 2. That sounds interesting, but I don't know if any of these things are gonna be big hits. Like, none of them. I can't bet on any of these horses yet.
Yeah. What's the thing that excited you the most, Anthony? Was there anything out of all this?
I was pleasantly surprised to read that the Thunderbolts one had a more of a Winter Soldier feel.
Okay.
Deadpool, I think, is a given.
Yeah.
The Alien one, I think, is also a surprise. And then Kingdom, you know, I'm all in on Kingdom. So those are the four I like.
Alien Romulus is this year, too. We're getting a just this year's crazy, right? You get a Godzilla movie, Alien movie, a Planet of the Apes movie.
All stuff we've seen before.
Yeah. It's the
Roadhouse
year.
Roadhouse movie.
It is the year of reboots and sequels. Like, if you look, every movie has either a number after it, or it's a reboot, or it's a sequel, like a 2, 3, 4. Like, that's every movie this year. It's kind of crazy. A couple of regional things here and there. One we're going to talk about very soon, but I think that's it for now. We will take a break here, play some promos, come back, talk about Alex Garland's latest movie, Civil War, right after this.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
I'm Imran.
And I'm Sophia.
I'm the brother.
And I'm the sister. And we are watching a show about cousins.
We're your hosts for Dance of Joy, a Perfect Strangers rewatch podcast.
We grew up watching the 80s hit sitcom, and now we'd like you to join us every week as we rediscover our love for our favorite TV cousins, Balky and Larry.
You can find our show at danceofjoypod.com and on all major podcast platforms. Now we are so happy, Sophia, we do the Dance of Joy.
Imran, this is a podcast. They can't see us.
Oh, po-po.
What's up? This is Brian, and I'm the host of Citizens of Pawnee, a Parks and Recreation podcast. That's right, a podcast dedicated to my favorite TV show, Parks and Rec. Every week, I discuss my favorite things about the show, which include character breakdowns, episode rewatches, and other random facts and tidbits about the show. You can find me on Instagram at Citizens of Pawnee Podcast, and listen wherever you get your podcast now. You will literally love it.
Listener, if you enjoy this show, this is a good time to join our Patreon fan club. Visit jockandnerd.com/Patreon.
Jock and Nerd!
The link is in the episode description, and you can give back on a monthly or annual basis. We appreciate everyone's support. You keep the show running, and you get stuff like access to an exclusive podcast feed where the shows come out early. There's instant movie reactions after we go see a movie. There's bonus movie reviews, bonus audio. I posted our little songs about monkeys bit on the Patreon.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, that was fun. That's the thing. On there, I could play music and we can comment on it and no one's going to say anything.
That's right.
Over here, a little trickier with the copyright issues. So, fun stuff over there.
There's Discord, too, remember?
Yes, we do a monthly Discord hangout just for our Patreon members. April's Discord is this week. It's Thursday, April 18th, the day after this show posts. You guys, who's going to be there?
When is it? April
18th? I'll be there.
This Thursday, April 18th.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah, come talk to me. Come hang out.
Okay, Ruggs will be there. Maybe the Jock will be there. It's always
put
it in your calendar. It's always a special
surprise. He might surprise us. You never know.
I prefer it when you just pop in and surprise us and we do. That's always fun. That's this week. Sign up for that. And lots of other fun stuff on the Patreon. jockandnerd.com/Patreon. Check it out. Okay. Let's get to this week's review. We are reviewing Alex Garland's latest movie titled Civil War. Here's your spoilers.
Strap yourselves in, you fucks. Spoiler.
spoiler time.
On the Rotten Tomatoes, this movie currently sitting at 82% now, 7.6 out of 10. Audience score, 77%. Both of these numbers were higher before. This movie is from A24. And this is the movie with the highest budget for any A24 movie, around $50 million. Opening weekend, it does better than they projected, was like 12 to 24 million. It opens to 25.7 million. This makes it, it also opened at number one, knocking off Godzilla X Kong. This makes it A24's first number one opening movie, the biggest opening for any movie they put out. And it is also the biggest R-rated opening of the year. All very interesting. It's doing well considering this is a little A24 movie. Like I said, it's directed by Alex Garland. It's also written by Alex Garland. This is the fourth. It's only his fourth movie that he's writing and directing. He's also known for writing. I love Alex Garland, first of all. You got your Ex Machina. You got your Annihilation. He did a movie called Men in 2022, which is like a horror movie. He did that series Devs on Hulu, Rugs.
That was great, yeah.
I still haven't watched that. And he also wrote 28 Days Later and Sunshine. And he's writing the sequel 28 Years Later, they're going to do. So he's working on that. The movie stars Kirsten Dunst as photojournalist Lee Miller. You got Wagner Moura as Joel. You may remember him from the Narcos Pablo Escobar memes, where he's just sitting around waiting. Is that him? Right?
Yes, that's it.
That is him.
Yeah, he's real chubby. I forgot that he played Escobar, and he's all like chubby in that. It's crazy. Kaylee Spaney as young photog Jesse. Nick Offerman playing the president. And Stephen McKinley Henderson as the veteran war reporter, Sammy, and a couple other people. Anthony.
Yes.
What happens in this R-rated 1 hour, 49-minute movie, Civil War?
Ooh, this is about a civil war in the U.S. where you're not really clear what has caused this war, but it's been happening for a while, and there's the U.S. and the Western Front made up of California and Texas and Western forces, and then there's other factions as well, but it's not really about the war in or the politics behind the war, but it's more following this group of photographers that are documenting the war, led by Kirsten Dunst's character. I believe her name's Lee.
Yes.
And there's her, and there's two other males, and then a young girl that joins unexpectedly, and they are on their way to Washington, D.C. to hopefully interview the president before Washington, D.C. is taken over, and they're on the way. They're documenting the war, and you get to see the life of a photographer in the midst of a war or a hypothetical civil war.
Yeah, and other casting, I forgot to mention Jesse Plemons.
Oh, Fat Damon.
Matt Damon. If Matt Damon ate Philip Seymour Hoffman, right. Yes, you combine those two. He's also married to Kirsten Dunst.
Is he really? I didn't know that at all.
And I heard the story was he wasn't even supposed to be in this movie. He was just there with her taking care of the kids. And they were like, do you want to be in the movie? You want this role? And we'll get to that. It's an amazing scene. But the reactions I've seen to this movie are crazy. People seem to either love it or hate it. Now, if you know Alex Garland's work, and you know the studio A24, the kind of stuff they put out, you kind of know what you're walking into. Maybe some people didn't, but the fact that this title is so provocative and these numbers are the most they've ever made is very interesting. Anthony, at the end of the movie, how are you feeling? How did this movie make you feel and think?
So you kind of summed up, or not summed up, but you prefaced it well. A24 movie, Alex Garland movie. I did see that Civil War, you mentioned this too, they spent the most they've ever spent.
Yeah.
I was watching one of Stuckman's reviews, because he is very charismatic. The critical drinker said that one time. He said something about him being charismatic and making a tongue-in-cheek joke, and I I enjoyed that. Apparently, A24 is their business model. They needed to do something like this because they've been doing a lot of these indie movies that are very niche. And while they get a lot of praise, they don't make a ton of money.
Yeah.
So they needed to do something like this where they can invest in a movie that's bigger in scope, but still has that A24 flavor. So I think if you go into this movie, I didn't know what to expect first off when I went into this movie. And it's a little bit misleading because it is called Civil War. The trailers lead you to believe it's this big action epic. It's shown in IMAX, so you don't typically see character movies in IMAX.
Yeah, it's true.
And this one is an A24 character movie first and foremost, rather than a war movie. It doesn't really take sides in terms of, or even give you any info on what the politics are of this movie, what's causing the conflict. As far as what I thought of the movie, it was all right. A24, I've liked some A24 movies. I haven't seen a ton. I've seen some movies that are A24 and I've enjoyed them. I've only seen Annihilation from Alex Garland. I thought that was fucking weird. But he's done Ex Machina and some other movies that have gotten praise. It's not a movie I would probably want to rewatch. It's not that it's like horrible. It's just very, 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 very character driven. Not the most entertaining. I think where I fall with it is I think the most entertaining stuff for me was the scenes where they come across people that are in the war and are just doing horrible shit because they're doing horrible shit. So some of that stuff is pretty white knuckle, like the gas station scene or the
sniper
scene or the
and then the Jesse Plemons scene.
Yeah, and all those stuff are pretty white knuckle.
Yeah.
I think those are good. I feel like the end of the movie kind of gets a little away from the character stuff and gets into this war type shit. So I feel like it's a very mixed bag. So I did enjoy the dichotomy of the Kirsten Dunst's character being this hard ass and then kind of softening up towards the end, and then the kid being a kid and then by the end is just as hardened photographer. So there's that dichotomy of them changing and switching roles by the end. Yeah, I don't know. I think there's a long way of saying I was a little bit mixed on this movie. I don't think it's going to be this big classic. I just don't really know where it was trying to go. Like, it doesn't go all the way with anything. So it kind of is just this viewing experience where you're sitting on the shoulders of a photographer and seeing everything. But I don't know. I might build off of what you guys say, but go ahead.
Rugs. Opening thoughts.
I feel like it's a procedural version of Children of Men.
Okay.
Without like all of the world building and the sci-fi and all that fun stuff. So it's okay. So you start off, it's kind of sci-fi because it's an alternate history. And
it's a little sci-fi.
It throws it into that area of this alternate world where somehow Texas and fucking California team up together, which will never happen.
That's how you know it's science fiction.
Yeah.
Right? So, right away, you can put everything to rest. You're like, oh, I'm at ease. It's not real.
So it's hard to like, you're obviously like, you can't go into this movie without acknowledging those things, right? You're like, and they don't tell you why they've teamed up, really. They make some allusions here and there, but this movie is not about why. It's about, so the fact that this movie is called Civil War and a lot of its cachet is embedded in that. Like, this movie could have been about anything, and following photographers into a cartel, and the same things would pretty much happen. They don't really discuss, they're just all like kind of amazed this is happening in their own country. And that's about it. That's as far as we get. And that there's a lot of tension because there is the lines are not that clear. You don't know who's who. You don't know who's the bad, who's good.
Yeah.
And so that creates a lot of tension. So the movie has some great tension, has some great cinematography, has some moments where like there's beauty in the destruction and you see like there's place burning down, but it looks like a beautiful scene.
Oh, and they're driving through the forest fire.
So, like, there's a lot of Alex Garland juxtaposing things in this.
Yes.
That's kind of artsy and stuff. So there's got a lot there.
Yeah.
But, and I know that, like, even at the end of the movie where they get that quote, which amounts to nothing, and you're like, well, this whole movie's pointless pretty much, because, like, you don't really even get to understand what happens. You just hear it in passing that, oh, everyone's given up on the president and he's like there for the taking and there's only a few people left and let's go get him. And so it feels like it was very one-sided too. I never felt like there was even going to be any kind of resistance. I felt like that it was like a done deal the whole time we're just watching this done deal. So the tension was very strange for me. It was in parts, like in these little moments, the tension is there when they're getting shot at, when they go into the building and they're trying to get that one guy and she gets the picture of the guy getting shot. And then it's freeze framing as it's going.
I love that. When they started taking pictures, I was like, so I hope they show us these photos.
So there is there is a lot of visual, like, ingenuity and artistry going on, and Alex Garland's very talented, but I think that this movie doesn't ascend to the level that it could have if he just would have been brave enough to, like, maybe he could still toe the line where he doesn't really let you know politics wise what's going on here, but just a little bit more information to kind of get you to buy in a little bit more, because I always felt like I was at arm's length.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And I wanted to buy in, but I don't know what kind of an American are you is basically the most important line in the whole movie. Without that line, this movie's meaningless.
I mean, I get all that. And
you loved it.
My experience, though, watching this, I came out and it kept me thinking. It kept me asking questions. I kind of really enjoyed this movie. Look, I found it very gripping. I love the tension. I think it's very thought provoking. Sometimes it's unsettling. It's uncomfortable. It is uneven. There are some weird choices.
What provoked thought?
I think
it doesn't have any sort of
political
stance.
That's the point of the movie. Is it's a tribute to the journalists, and you're following them, and you're thinking about what their job is, what their humanity is. I think the juxtaposition of these tableaus they encountered, these war crimes, that you've seen pictures of this in other war-torn countries across the world, that in America, seeing it here is kind of crazy.
I think that's the only thing that gives it something else to think about, is where you're like, oh, these guys have done this all over the world. Now they're doing it in their own country.
And how does the journalist feel after shooting it all over the world and now seeing the same things in your country?
Well, don't see any crisis. They seem to be oblivious about it.
They drop us right into the thing, right? And that, I think, and regarding, like, I thought the dialogue was very real, because in any other movie, you would have these people talking about what happened to fill the audience in, exposition dialogue.
Right.
But in real life, if this has been going on for a while, you're not still kind of talking about that. You're talking about the moment, right? And I just
movie does feel real.
Yes.
Like, people act like, at the end, I was thinking about maybe there was a twist and the president does this. But then I thought to myself, there's not going to be a twist, because that's not how real things happen.
Right.
So, but yeah, go ahead.
I thought Kristen Dunst was fantastic in this. And it's crazy to think about her career from Interview with a Vampire to Mary Jane. And now she was fantastic as this, because you could see in her face, she's drained. She has a panic attack that, you know, she's looking in the mirror. She doesn't know what she's looking at. She's in a dress. The other thing that gives this movie points, it's great. Also very weird. They used a De La Soul song in the beginning. Say No Go from their 1989 album. I was like, holy shit, De La Soul. But where they used it, I found extremely odd, his choice of these songs, like, during this raid. But I think the point is, if you're a war journalist, it doesn't matter who's the good guy or the bad guy. You're there. She says it. Yeah, she says it. She's like, our job is to just take the pictures. It's someone else's job to decide what it means.
Here's some of the gripes I have. Number one, the young girl. You never.
She was annoying. I hated the writing. You never really get
her age because she seems younger than she is.
Like 23, I thought she said.
But this, she looks like she's like 12.
She does.
And she's running around with a black and white camera that you need film for. That's completely. That's odd. That's like a choice that is forced.
It's very hipstery.
And no one's doing that. Like, there's, you got like maybe 24 shots you could take on one roll of film. You're going to be done in 3 seconds.
And then she's like she's got to develop the negative and it reminded me of photo class.
Give me a break. You're not doing that.
So artsy.
Number two is, I can't believe that there was no defense of the president. Like, the president's got the most power. Like, people are just going to roll in on him.
We joined the story. And
like, is there a coup? Like, what?
It already happened.
Like, we don't even know.
When the Western forces are about to invade DC, like, it's all happened. The Capitol is falling. We just happened to join the story then. And they want, and it's for them, it's just getting the scoop. Who gets the picture first? The girl, though, some of the writing on this girl annoyed the shit out of me.
She jumps out of a car.
Yeah. First of all, the dudes roll up in the car. It's their buddies. And the guy's like, I'm going to hop into your car.
That was good tension, though, that scene.
Yes. The tension is great because he's there and you're like, oh, he knows them. But you're like, what's going on? And then the girl's like, I'm going to go over there. What the fuck, girl? And then they just take off and you're like, that girl's an idiot. What are you doing?
Yeah.
But then it leads into arguably the best scene in the movie. Jesse Plemons with those red sunglasses dumping bodies like it's Sarajevo or fucking Mogadishu or some shit. And he's like sprinkling lye on the bodies. And you don't know what side he's on.
He might be. And that's the thing. You don't even know if he's just taking advantage of the situation,
which makes it even more frightening. And it's the kind of world like a Walking Dead apocalypse where anybody you meet on the street, you have no idea what the fuck's going to happen. And that whole interaction was this movie is so great. It makes you so tense that one gunshot goes off and I literally jumped in my seat several times.
Well, I think they do a good job, just to interject there. I think they do a good job with the sound design.
Oh, like, yes.
The bullets feel.
Yes.
It doesn't feel cool, right? The guns go off and you jump. You go, fuck, shit. Yeah. You know, it doesn't. It's not. It's a very immersive in terms of its sound design.
Imagine, the way the bullet. Or
the sound design was fantastic. Like the scratchy or noise in the beginning. Remember, there was like this weird scratchy. You're like, what the fuck?
In the beginning, it's meant to make you feel really uncomfortable. This movie.
And it works. And like the violence is like not flashy, like you said. It's not, and it makes it seem so real when it happens. But then, yeah, he shoots the two Asian dudes. Why didn't that guy just say, I'm from Chicago? That was my question. Why did he actually have to say Hong Kong or whatever he said? Just tell him you're from Kansas. It's fine.
Yeah.
And then the old man comes in with the save. That was great. But here's, look, they do a little world building, which I kind of appreciated. You get the details you get are this president is a self-appointed third term.
Yeah. And so that makes no sense. So he's a third term president. That means that he's circumvented all kinds of stuff. He's going to allow a secession from the union without like hitting them with everything they have. Like, well, I don't think he would be the one who abused the power, wouldn't he? He's already abusing power.
I mean, they mentioned that like he's firebombed those people, but I guess Texas and California.
They also mentioned that he shoots journalists.
Oh, yeah. On site.
People, yeah.
Yes.
Shot shooting.
I like the detail that like Canadian money is more valuable than American money.
Oh, yeah. That's great.
That was clever. I love the Western Forces flag. It just has all the stripes and two big stars.
No, a lot of those details are good. The best scene is that Jesse Plemons scene.
Yeah.
You know, there's just so much white knuckle tension. I just feel like the movie kind of straddled the line. Like by the end, it gets into this big war scene in DC.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's pretty well shot.
That's fucking great.
It's crazy. You know, it's, you know, it feels real. There's you feel a lot of, you know, there's a lot to look at, but it almost kind of becomes a different movie, in my opinion, because the movie is so quiet and subdued up to that point.
Mm-hmm.
And prior to that point, the whole mission is done. You know, they're going to take over and they're not going to be able to get the interview.
Yeah, they thought they were too late. Yeah,
I'm kind of just watching this at the end and I don't really even know what I'm wanting to see. And I know, and then you have the ending where the fucking stupid girl gets and jumps in the middle.
again, and causes this girl's Kirsten so
Dunst
dumb.
To try to save her. So there's that character evolution of Kirsten Dunst now wanting to save her, and then she takes the pictures of her getting shot and moves on.
That
so
was
I guess
crazy.
There's that little moment, but
yeah.
I don't know. I felt like the movie kind of peaked with the Jesse Plemons stuff, and then it's the other, even though the action and stuff is nice, I don't know. It just, I felt like the movie didn't go all the way on anything. Like, it has this concept of the Civil War, never really gives you that, so you don't really feel, and maybe and that's purposeful, I think. You know, you don't really feel what the sides are, what the stakes are, who's going for what. Fine, whatever. You're not doing that. You're doing more of a quiet film where you're standing by and watching all this stuff happen as if it's real life. But all that stuff is good, and then the end of the movie becomes a lot bigger in scope than what you would be seeing. And it just didn't, there's a lot of like cool moments, but I didn't feel like I got an awesome overall movie experience. And maybe that's even by design.
It feels manipulative. That's why. It feels like being manipulated. Because there's a movie called Funny Games. You ever hear of this movie?
Yeah, yeah. That movie's crazy.
So Funny Games is a movie where these people get invaded in their home by these people. And every single time that they're about to get free, they don't. Every single planet they have doesn't work. And it's just like they never, like they're always leading to something. And it's basically, you want to get your hopes up to dash those hopes. And that's the whole movie.
Don't they break the fourth wall in that movie?
Yes,
too?
They do as well.
It's wild. It's a wild movie. It's really
but
good.
That's but like when I was watching Funny Games, I was like, oh, you guys, why are you writing it like this? Like, and then I'm like getting mad. I'm like, and I felt the same way about this. Like, why are they're writing it like this? Like, there's no way in hell that they're going to go into the White House like that. That White House is like fucking James Bond shit everywhere.
Yo, but
like,
they know
machine
they
guns out, that come out every from the walls.
Are there?
Yeah, of course.
They took out the Secret Service. They had the decoy limo. Look, it's a lot like
they have like a fucking. There's a fucking bug out room that he could fucking. Oh. Leaving a train underneath, he can do
there's
a million
probably
things.
A panic room.
Yeah,
but it's look, it's a lot like Alex Garland's other movies, but also completely different. It's similar in the overall structure, right? He's got it. He always has this slow, measured pace, and it builds up to like a crazy ending. All of his movies have like strong female leads characters. If you think about it, so he writes
strong
that well.
Strong female leads,
but it was kind of weird. After Kirsten Dunst gets shot, nobody checks on her.
It's yeah, they just let her die.
And I was like, I thought she was wearing Kevlar. I was like, maybe she's not dead, but I think she's supposed to be dead. She's dead. Handing the baton on to Jesse. And then over the credits, so a lot of that end scene reminded me of like, you know, when they probably found Bin Laden or when they bust in to find the head of the cartel. It's not very pretty. It's, you can't glamorize it. It's awkward. People say shit like that. You know, and he says, stop, I need a quote. And the president says, wait, don't let them kill me. And then Wagner Mora's like, that'll do. And they fucking shoot him. And then over the credits, you see this photo get exposed of all of them posing with the dead president. That reminded me of like the Abu Ghraib photos that they were taking. So I feel like Alex Garland saw what happened on January 6th and was like, I wonder what if we extrapolated on this, what would it look like down the line? But I was at first, I was also like, why didn't he tell us what the thing was? But then it didn't matter to me because I enjoyed the journey.
Well, he's
of these
doing
characters.
That. I see what he's doing. He's doing that because he's picked a very specific thing on purpose. He's doing it from the photographer's view.
Right.
And as we've mentioned, photographers are there just to document. They don't have a side. They're not picking a side. They're just documenting and letting the world make of it what they want. So I get what he was going for. I think as I've thought about this more and you guys are talking about, for me, I think where the movie falls a bit short is it's stuck in between a couple of things. It wants to be this art house thing,
mm-hmm.
but it also wants to be a bigger movie. And I think it didn't strike the perfect balance of threading both of those.
I like, though, that it leaves a lot of, you know, he makes movies that you watch and you want to talk about right away. And I think
but
I feel
do you
like
want to talk about it.
Well, I think he left it open to put your own whatever like political agenda on top.
All right,
and
okay, let's
have all
talk
these
about
questions.
The Civil War aspect, which is
what is
the
there
title
about?
Of this
I don't
movie.
We don't even know what
well,
was.
Let's talk about it. So what happened in your opinion? What is What did you learn from this? That,
well, look, I think also, though, I don't think even the characters knew what they're doing. I love that scene with the sniper where, you know, the guys have like spray painted hair and painted nails. And Joel is like, who do you take orders from? And he's like, we don't take orders from anybody. They're trying to kill us. We're trying to kill them. That's it. And so I love seeing that, like, a large part of the country even doesn't know what's going on. What would have happened?
Well, I'm asking you, what do you get? Like, okay, so the subject of, or the name of this movie is Civil War.
I don't think that's the
point.
All
you learn is that war is horrible.
So, okay, like that, yes. The question is,
but the only reason I think I asked you that is because you mentioned how Alex Garland movies make you think about shit at the end.
Yeah.
But what is making you think about?
Well, what is the message?
The only thing that's new, the only thing that I learned that's new is that, or that I didn't stop to think about is, these people are in the line of fire, these photographers. Yeah. And that's basically the only thing that I really learned, like, we don't really get a lot of movies about photographers going into battle zones. And then that's the newest thing.
I think maybe you get to see the perspective of a photographer and how they can continue to, like, they get so hardened by it.
Yeah.
Where they, you know, their perspective changes because they lose, you know, they lose their sense of humanity. I mean, she literally asks him, you know, would you take a picture of me? Take a picture of me as I'm dying. She's like, yeah. And then that's what the kid does.
Yeah.
I do see some poetry in what they're doing. I just feel like, they didn't go all the way with it. I don't think they went fully with the character story. I don't think they went fully with the politics. I think they did a lot of cool things together, but I don't think they, like I said before, I don't think they threaded the needle between everything they had going on to make it a movie that you went by the end, wow, like, this is really well shot. But, you know, even if I compare it to Annihilation, which I thought was fucking weird, at least by the end of that, I was going, what the fuck was that? Whereas this, I went, solid movie, I guess, but nothing I'm going to think about.
It seems too mundane, because January 6th is way crazier than what the fuck's going on here, right?
Is it?
I mean,
no, fucking tame compared to what he's showing.
Because
here,
like this is like Beirut, about, like,
and Gaza and shit.
Imran, you just turn the TV on right now, you'll see actual war going on.
Listen, so it's mundane. Outside of Chicago is a war zone every day.
Yeah, but, like, so it is mundane. Okay, it's mundane. All right.
I don't think it's mundane. It's showing us these images that you wouldn't imagine happen in America, where it's just lawless and they're stringing up looters, and you just get shot for saying you're from the wrong country. Like,
but I think on that note, I think they could have leaned even more into that.
Sure.
I think we
can watch Walking Dead and see that.
It is a little.
I would
bit
have preferred
dead.
That they lean more into that tension, of them coming across different groups of people, not knowing what the fuck is happening. Not, you know, I think they dabble in it, but then they also want you to really, like, sit back and just watch these people live, and it's just not for me.
Like, any post-apocalyptic or any post whatever story, like Walking Dead, anytime that you have. Any post-apocalyptic thing, you're getting the same thing. You're walking into towns where people are trying to preserve their peace. There's not, to me, I think it's mundane at this point. And there's real war going on right now, and you're seeing dead bodies on Twitter all the time. So
where, in the U.S.?
Not in the U.S., but everywhere.
That's what I'm saying.
Everywhere. So the fact that it's in the U.S. is the only kind of,
right. That was his point.
Yeah, well,
and it's like the story of Lee trying to wrestle with her humanity. She has panic attacks at the end, and she realizes she snaps out of it.
The kid sparks her humanity.
Yes, and she sees a little bit of herself in this kid, right? Before she got all jaded.
But I don't feel like, I think another problem I have with the movie is I get what they're going with. I lay that out. The girl, hardened girl becomes soft. Soft girl becomes hard by the end.
Yeah.
But their relationship together, like, I didn't, you got to have it. So, like, these four by the end, I'm just like, fucking, they're the best together. I love seeing them all together. But I feel like the movie is almost too quiet in that you're just sitting with them. And I don't know that I felt like I loved all of them together, if that makes sense. Like, I don't feel like they felt like a family by the end where I'm like, fuck, how could you do that to them?
See, I felt that way when Sammy fucking got shot and hit. Stephen McKinley Henderson was great as like the veteran guy.
Yeah, he's good.
You know, as a counter to the young girl. But
the movie doesn't rest on him. It rests on Kirsten Dunst and the other girl, Bond.
Yeah, the strength of this movie is the characters interacting and kind of them showing this young girl what they go through and in her and her changing and everybody kind of changing a little bit and growing as a character. But this situation could have happened anywhere. That's all I'm saying. It's like nothing special that it's happening in America other than it's shock value. Like this whole story could have happened in fucking anywhere in the Middle East. It could happen in
no, that's where it happened. So it is just, I guess, the shock value of setting it in the US. Yeah.
See, well, you could have told this exact same story in fucking in any other country. Yeah. So
what was the character Wagner Moura like?
Yeah.
Joel, I don't really know what he was doing.
He was a journalist. So he's a journalist. He writes stories, right? He would be the writer. Same thing with Sammy was also. She's a photographer.
Other than being a guy that just wants to cover the war.
Well, I love when he
feel
sees
like I know. I don't feel like I understand what his purpose
is. So he's the kind of guy. He's in the beginning when he sees the tracer fire, right? He's like, that tracer fire is making me hard. Like he just gets excited. Just to fight. I like tornado chasers. It's kind of the same thing with war journalists. And like in the beginning, that whole suicide bomb bit, again, you've seen that in other countries. And then what does Kristen Dunst do instead of helping people? She's walking around taking fucking pictures, right? So like what kind of person is that? That's their first instinct.
Yeah, that's what they're going for, right, is a character study. I just don't know. I don't think they even went all the way on the character study part.
I mean, I feel a little more sympathy.
Yeah, I mean, you can. It's fine.
Journalists. Yeah.
I just don't. I feel like the movie is lost between a couple things.
Yeah.
It's also like it's not really like Alex Garland usually does more sci-fi stuff. So this is a little out of his wheelhouse.
Yeah. Yeah.
If I could summarize it, I'd say it's out of the wheelhouse for Alex Garland. It's out of the wheelhouse for A24.
Yeah.
And you can tell that they're caught between a couple of things. They want to do art house. They also want to do a big budget movie. They want to have a concept that hooks you right away, but they don't want to actually explore that concept. So it's just it's a movie stuck between a couple of different masters that I don't know if, for me, doesn't fully hit.
So the other thing is he's British, right? So if for him to take a side, I think maybe he thought he would be overstepping. This is kind of his observation and reaction happening.
I think, look, I'm watching something that's an alternate history of America. Like there's also the Man in the High Castle.
Yeah.
So you can do alternate histories and explore different avenues without.
Yeah, but in Escape from New York, do you know why New York is a prison? No, it doesn't matter. You got Snake Plissken.
But that's not what the movie's about. It's not called Why is New York a Prison?
So this movie should have just been called like Shooting War or something.
It should have been called War Photographers.
Or whatever the name is. Come up with a name for them.
Yeah, some kind of a...
I agree. It's a little misleading, but this helped them get people into the seats and pay to find out what...
Well, not only that, but it's like the whole entire mystique about this movie was like, oh, look at this movie. It's so thoughtful.
Look, I'll admit, seeing the trailer, I thought we were getting something else. We didn't get that, but I liked what he presented us still.
Yes, there's a lot of merit to this film, but I do think that whenever you go in and you feel shortchanged.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, you shouldn't. And then there are people who are like, well, you shouldn't expect that. But if you're going to advertise it as something, then that's on you. If you're going to play off of that, use that to get people into the theater, you have to accept the criticism.
You don't, you're not delivering the promise of the premise that you're advertising. You advertised a movie about a civil war in America, which is an awesome premise.
Yeah.
You throw it in IMAX.
Yeah.
You're expecting a very big movie, and that movie is really not concerned with any of that. It's a flip, and some people really like that, but you can't be mad when people walk in thinking they saw one thing and then
Sure.
They were like, what the fuck did I just watch?
Yeah. And that doesn't mean that it can't be a great film. I think it is great in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
So, but you have to acknowledge those things.
Just seeing them fucking fire missiles at the Lincoln Memorial. That was wild. That was fucking wild. I was like, oh my God. And they really went for it at the end there.
See, that for me is a problem with the movie because you 3/4 of the movie are not about that.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, you know, you're having these scenes where they're just sitting in the car or they're laying down.
Yeah.
And then the third act, you have them firing. You have helicopters flying through Washington, D.C. and you have these sweeping shots and you have them firing missiles at the Lincoln Memorial and trying to invade the White House. And for me, it was like, this is completely different than what you wanted me to be buy into for 3/4 of this movie.
But for me, it was kind of the payoff. Like, now we get the war scene. Just the like, I felt I was with them in that battle. It was very tense. You didn't know what the fuck was going to happen. And it was the explosive payoff that we were building to from the beginning when they're like, we got to get to D.C. So it's the end of the story. And sometimes that's how they end. Guy gets shot. That's it. It's over.
Yeah. I don't know.
So the other interesting thing in March, there was an article in The Guardian where Alex Garland said after this movie, he wants to step back from directing, focus more on writing again. He also wrote a novel. He's not retiring, but he said he wanted to step back from directing. So I thought that was interesting. But I like Alex Garland's stuff.
I think Ex Machina is his best movie.
Well, okay, let's finish up. Final thoughts, rate it, rank it, Rugs. Why don't you start? Give me a number. And then out of the four movies, I haven't seen all. I've seen 3 of the 4.
Mm-hmm.
You can rank it.
I've only seen 3 of the 4.
Yeah, okay.
I haven't seen Men.
Yeah, I heard.
Seen Debs.
I heard people say Men is their least favorite of his. So I do want to watch it. It's kind of interesting looking. Well, give me a number and where would and
I think it's thoughts. I think it's a solid 7.
Okay.
So I feel like it's way above average and it has some great cinematography.
Oh, yes.
Great poetic stuff going on. But yeah, it doesn't quite deliver. I feel like that there's a little bit more there on the table.
Fully cooked.
Yeah, I feel like it's just lacking a little bit. So but still worth checking out. I don't know if I would go to the theater to see it. I'd probably wait till it comes out on DVD or something. I
thought it was nice in the IMAX.
I don't know. I didn't
think
it needed to
see it. There's some beautiful shots, right? Like when they're sitting in front of the river and talking, the way the light off the river is like in the bokeh pattern behind them, like fucking gorgeous. Just see, and he grabs these great atmospheric shots. Anthony, give me a number.
Yeah, this movie for me is a solid 6 out of 10.
Okay.
I've only seen this in Annihilation. Fuck, those are both. Annihilation is just fucking weird for me.
Yeah.
So I think I maybe like this a little more. I want to throw another question out there before I move on, though.
Yeah.
And you guys can think about this, but would love to get some of your favorite A24 films after we're done.
Oh.
And I can rattle off some once you give your rating and ranking.
I don't know how many of those I've seen. There's a lot of horror movies. There's a lot of them. But what'd you say? You said 6? Okay.
Yeah.
Garland also wrote Dread.
Which
is a ripoff of The Raid, but he still wrote that. I'm going to give this movie an 8 out of 10. I enjoyed it. It stuck with me. It left me thinking. It left me frustrated, yes, but I wanted to talk about it immediately. I thought there were some weird choices, but there is a De La Soul song, so that makes it go up a whole point. Yeah,
if only
just for that.
They were on the track and all of a sudden Camille walked out.
Oh my God. Like Aziz or Dev Patel. I thought the performances are all around the board. They were very good. I was annoyed at how the girl was written, but maybe that was the point. And I don't know, I like Alex Garland's stuff, so I'm going to give it 8 out of 10. Out of the three, I just watched Ex Machina, so I'm going to talk about that in a little bit. So I've seen Ex Machina, Annihilation, and this one. I do think Ex Machina is probably his best one. Then maybe this movie, although I'd like Annihilation. Shit. Maybe this, then Annihilation, then Civil War. It would be the order. But I would recommend going to see this. Like, I think it it makes you, it's a movie that's like really got people talking about it, and just the like half of the people are like, this is a masterpiece. The other half of the people are like, this is a complete vapid waste of time. That's fucking crazy. Like, you can have elicit those two opposite reactions. So I think
it's definitely going to be, you have to go into this film with a very clear, like, hey, I know what the title is.
Right.
But it's an A24 Alex Garland film.
Right.
Yeah. I'm here to see a movie about photographers.
Right.
Especially the Alex Garland part. Yes.
Well, even A24 is very, very character driven. Very all right, much.
Give us those A24 films. What do you got?
That I like?
What do you like? And yeah, your question about which ones?
Well, the ones, I mean, there's a lot of A24 films. They've been around since 2013, it looks like. I guess they're like the, I don't even know. Maybe they're too big now, but I feel like they're the film snobs' favorite movie.
Right.
The art house fans' favorite movie studio. Yeah.
They're trying to scale up, though, clearly, right? Clearly. With this attempt. Yeah.
Some of my favorite A24 films, I'll go with The Spectacular Now. That one was a good one with, what's his name? Miles Teller. That's a good one. Moonlight. That one won an Oscar, so that's not really saying anything much. Room with Brie Larson. That's a good one. The other ones that I really liked back when I was really, this was all, by the way, Anthony Polanski. this was when I, Uncut Gems. I really like that one.
Adam Sandler.
Yeah. Minari. I like that one.
Minari is great.
And what else? Is there anything else that I really liked?
You need to see Everything Everywhere All at Once.
I know that one's there.
Yeah.
Popular Spring Breakers is on there.
Swiss Army Man, also a very good movie. Very.
I was
going to
say that one. I was going to say Under the Skin.
Yeah.
That's a good one. The Green Knight I seen.
That's Dev Patel.
X. Which
is that the horror one?
Lady Bird.
Lady Bird's a good one.
Oh, Disaster Artist with James Franco about Tommy Wiseau.
That's right.
Fantastic.
And Florida Project.
People like Hereditary and that stuff, right? That's they do a lot of, but I mean, this is I love the variety kind of, and
are you an A24 guy, Imran?
Now looking at these, Under the Silver Lake is a fucking wild movie that makes no sense.
You know what else is A24?
What's that?
The Vanishing of Sydney Hall, directed by Sean Christensen.
Oh, A24 put out that movie.
Yeah,
holy crap!
Sean's other movie, huh?
Wow. Yeah, shout out to Sean.
a guest on this podcast.
Yeah. Wow, we had him before he became an A24 guy.
No, it was after.
Now he really smells his own farts.
I heard After Sun is good, but The Whale, I still got to watch. That's on streaming. I heard that's very good. I love Darren Aronofsky.
Frasier.
Yes, in like fat suit and CG. Past Lives supposed to be good, but they make some great original.
I mean, some A24 movies I really fuck with. So it's not especially during that time when it was peak Polanski.
Yeah, a couple years ago,
I was all about A24. Yeah. I was watching all of them. Some of
pandemic
them, though,
times.
I watched First Cow. That one fucking sucked. I hated that movie. The Iron Claw. That's a first A24
Iron
movie.
Claw. I gotta watch that. I heard that's good.
Yeah. So
there's No, and they're putting out that Maxine movie. You might have seen that trailer.
That looks cool.
Yeah, with Mia Goth. Oh, they did the Steve Martin documentary I talked about last week. Oh.
Hmm.
A24 is pretty good. All right, let's do some news from the nation.
It's time for news from the nation.
Let me, before we do that, flush the toilet.
It stinks.
Okay, I'm off the loo. What happened?
I'd be curious what our audience thinks of us reviewing A24 films. And I'd also pose to our audience, what A24 films do you like?
Yeah. I feel like the cats who are into the horror movies like a lot of A24 horror movies. They make good ones.
I think they generally make some pretty solid movies. It's just, They definitely tackle that art house niche.
And like you said, low budget, their movies don't always make a lot of money. So the fact that this thing opened at number one, made them the most opening, it's probably going to make the most, has the biggest budget. It's a big step for them. And I don't know. I guess they're happy with the divisiveness. Like, people are watching it. They're talking about it.
Yeah, they knew what they're getting into. They want people talking.
Yeah,
it's completely. It's completely on the nose there. Like, they needed to generate buzz.
Yeah.
So it did its job.
Yeah, absolutely. It's gonna work. Anyways, I got two comments from News from the Nation, and the kind of was gonna roll into what are we watching? John Belotti Jr. commented on the recent episode of X-Men 97. Episode 5. Anybody watch this?
Yeah, it was great.
Here, it's awesome.
It was pretty crazy. I won't spoil. Anthony, you haven't watched it?
I have not. Okay. So let me just say this real quick. How many episodes of X-Men are there?
There's 5 right now out of maybe 10 or 8.
I'll just say this. Sounds like from the buzz, and you guys can talk about it.
Yeah.
That we'll probably have to review this at the end.
I think we need to, because it's right. Okay. Look, I'm just going to read Belotti's comments. He goes,
You can spoil it if you like.
We'll spoil it.
I'm not really paying attention, so.
Okay. Well, spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
It gets fucking dark. Everybody dies on Genosha. It's kind of crazy. This whole storyline with the baby, Scott and the clone have the baby. Mr. Sinister steals the baby.
Want to read Belotti's quote too?
Yes, and then I'll read that. And then, but Cable's in it. He tries to stop him. Sentinels show up. They fucking kill everybody. There's a whole moment like Scarlet Witch when Vision dies, when she's like, I can't feel you. Rogue is holding fucking Gambit as he's dying, and she goes, I can't feel you. So Belotti says, how is this some of the best TV right now? I gave up on Marvel. I was done. Episode 5 was a revelation. I didn't think Disney/Marvel had the balls for an episode like this, but they had to create content like this in order to evolve as a brand. The MCU is very stale and sanitized, and for them to right the ship, they have to create stories like this. They managed to combine the best influences of anime, action films, and they give the X-Men power upgrades. Jubilee using an Ultraman weapon, he says, that makes silly superpowers incredibly awesome on screen. Gambit's words to that Sentinel and how final his final move was, because I need a cigarette. His mind is blown. The reactions to this episode have been wild. Rugs, what'd you think about where it is now?
I was like, as soon as Genosha starts getting attacked, I was like, oh shit, they're like making real big destruction going on here.
Yeah.
And, the stakes were so high at that point. And, it intertwines nicely with the story they're telling with Gambit, because Magneto's now around and he's losing his hold over Rogue, Rogue is unfortunately, due to her circumstances, kind of not giving Gambit the attention that he needs. So he kind of feels like it's almost like he has no reason to go on. And so he like makes the ultimate sacrifice.
There's like a kaiju sentinel just fucking busting shit up. Like, it was crazy. And yeah, you find out Rogue and Magneto's little backstory, which was a little weird that she didn't know who that was. Also, the original voice actor for Rogue is voicing Rogue. And I don't want to sound ageist, but she sounds a little old.
Yeah. So it's the lady who does Storm too. Yeah.
Yes. The originals came back, but they don't sound as young as they used to.
I mean, that's not ageist. That's just the truth. If she sounds old, it's because she's an old lady.
Yes. But it's kind of
30
funny.
Years.
Yes. I like that they brought the originals back, but she, you can hear her age a little bit. And this is not even like, there's still like five more episodes to go. This is just the middle, and they do this crazy thing, and I'm like, they just fucking killed everybody.
Look, I thought that I was going to hate this, and it's been pretty good.
Oh, so, and
let me ask Ruggs, because I know what he said in another chat, but I want to hear him say it here. Are you expecting the shoe to drop and them to fuck this up?
Could happen. Yeah. Could happen. Like, I know that there's got to be the guy who worked on this, who was fired for being weird on his OnlyFans.
Yeah, Bo DeMeo.
I feel like there's got to be a trace of that unstableness on here somewhere. And
that was it.
So
that was the start of it.
Maybe they caught it before it infiltrated the show.
Hopefully.
No, I think he finished all of the shit for the show. People are trying to get him his job back. They want Marvel to
because of one episode. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, like, this show is definitely getting. I'm hearing even like universal acclaim thus far. So
yeah, and the weekly release is great because the buzz is just getting bigger and bigger.
I'll tell you what. Whatever he did that was right was it's very simple. Went along with what the comics did for the most part.
Yeah.
Like the Mr. Sinister story, the Madeline Pryor stuff. That's all like 90s X-Men comics.
Yeah.
When they Genosha, that's all like out of X-Men. They're pulling from those comics. They're not trying to do their own thing at this point. They're still reverential. So and X-Men the series has always been doing that. So they did that one thing right. And I think that we're so starved for that, that when we get it, we're like, oh, it's great.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Is the reason it's special is they're following the comics and they can do it in animation. Another interesting detail. So it was hard to see. I saw this later in the one scene where they first get to Genosha. There's a shot of the sky, the night sky with stars. And there is a faint image of Uatu, the Watcher, in the sky. Before this massacre happens. I don't know if it's a crossover with What If or if it means like this is a canon event, because there is a moment where Cable comes in. He tries to stop it. He's too late. Like, this was always supposed to happen. Maybe. But yeah, it's real subtle. I was like, holy shit, there's a fucking Watcher in the sky. I don't know what that means. Just like I don't know what the asterisk means at the end of Thunderbolts.
Nobody knows.
Nobody does. Okay, moving on to another bunch of comments from the nation about the Fallout show on Amazon.
Yeah, I'm hearing a lot of good pub about this. I didn't even know. I thought we were talking about Fall Guy.
Oh, no, that's not out yet.
Fallout, the Mission Impossible. So,
it's not that either. It's not it's Mission Impossible.
It's the game Fallout from Bethesda,
It is the Amazon show dropped all at once about the video game Fallout. So Kyle Salazar says, played a few of the Fallout games. It's pretty cool. They have a lot of references to the different factions. Blake Braden says, I've gotten through 3 episodes so far. Great show. Lots of Easter eggs pointing to literally all of the video games. The story is a solid one with very Fallout humor. Justin Zwerner, so far it's good, he says. Samuel Meadows, watched the first 2 episodes, thought they were great. Jess Rivera says, only watched the first episode, but really liked the graphic way they handled it. Real gruesome scenes and the characters introduced are done well. I did not have a chance to watch this. I meant to try to squeeze it in. I watched some other shit I'll talk about, but I gotta watch this. Now, Ruggs, how much of this have you watched?
I watch it all.
Oh, shit. You son of a bitch. How many? It's 8 episodes?
Yeah.
All right.
I really enjoyed it, to be honest with you.
Okay, without spoiling it, well, give us your thoughts.
Okay, so how do I tease this? So Fallout is another alternate history of America, where the Cold War is like this thing that never ends, and there's a threat of communism and a nuclear war. So various American companies, America doesn't go global. It's America only. They're kind of isolated, and they decide that they're going to protect their own country by building these Fallout shelters. And people are going to live in the Fallout shelters. And they'll be protected from nuclear war. And so this takes 200 years later, after the whole entire world's blown to bits. It's a story of a girl who leaves the Fallout shelter for whatever reason. And I'm not going to tell you the reason. And is now in the wasteland and runs into a bunch of different characters. And you slowly learn about this new world and how it got to this way it is, and there's comedic things,
what's the tone of the show?
It's fairly serious, but it's got some comedy to it, so I would say not quite as crazy as what's that show that's on HBO with John Cena?
Peacemaker.
It's not as crazy as Peacemaker.
But not as serious as maybe like a Halo.
Not as serious. It's somewhere in the middle between the two.
Oh, interesting.
So
I was wondering if you'd seen the Twisted Metal show on Peacock. That's kind of wacky and it's got a lot of humor. It reminded me of that a little bit, but
I gotta watch this. Is ultra stylish. Everything looks great. The production value is awesome. Yeah, there's some scenes where you know that they're shooting it at some like abandoned warehouse here and there because they like ran out of money. But still, it still fits the whole narrative. And it's a character show. The characters are likable. Like the girl character, she's like this kind of person who's a fish out of water, discovering things. She's not like a girl boss that like everybody's she has to learn how to survive in this way. And she meets up with different characters and maybe is naive about things. And then there's other characters who are badasses, but there's so much more depth to them. And yeah, so it is, it's kind of fun. It's kind of like a fun ride. And is it the best show I've ever seen? No, but I think it's a welcome addition to what I'm watching. And it's kind of, it's fun. It's sci-fi. It's retro. It's alternate history. It's got all those things. And it feels like the game. There's one scene where they will go into this town called Philly. And I remember when I played Fallout, it looks exactly the same. Looks exactly the same as the game. So,
well, that's important.
Yeah. So okay. I could say that it's accurate to a large degree.
I'm going to watch it.
So
I will squeeze it in. Anthony, you watch anything?
There's so much that I should be watching, like this Fallout or fucking Shogun or X-Men 97. But instead, I watched a UFC 300.
Oh, how was that entertaining?
300. It was awesome.
Yeah.
If you're a big fight fan, it was a fucking amazing fight, night of fights. If you've, you should definitely look up the ending to Holloway versus Gaethje for the BMF title, also known as the baddest motherfucker title. The ending of that fight is one of the greatest endings you'll ever see. If I could describe it for you.
Yeah.
So just a quick synopsis. Justin Gaethje is this fighter at 155. He was the bad motherfucker champion. It's a made up belt, but it's basically this.
Is that what it stands for?
Yes, BMF. Actually, bad motherfucker champion. Baddest motherfucker champion.
That's
awesome. It's a real belt that the UFC made up just to like as a gimmick.
Okay.
It's basically for between two fighters. They'll occasionally have it where it's two fighters that they think are super action fighters. So Justin Gaethje is this 155 pound fighter. Max Holloway is this former 145 pound champion. He came up in weight to fight Gaethje for the bad motherfucker title. Oh. Everyone thought Gaethje was going to destroy him. Holloway's winning the fight basically the entire time. And then in the last 10 seconds, Holloway basically says, let's go in the middle and just start trying to slug and take each other's heads off.
Oh, my God.
So in the last 10 seconds, they get in the middle. They agree. And all of a sudden, they're just winging bombs at each other. And Holloway knocks him out with 1 second left, like face plants him. And it's just one of the wildest things you'll ever see because Holloway was winning the whole fight being super strategic, and you know, and then at the very end he's like, let's just fucking brawl, and they both brawl, and it's awesome.
Holy shit. Yeah. Wait, who won? Then who won?
Max Holloway. That's if you look up anywhere on YouTube or anything like that, it's one of the wildest endings you'll ever see.
Oh my God. That sounds great.
Cool. Yeah,
that's what I watched.
That sounds great. I gotta watch that. Rex, you caught up on Shogun?
Yeah.
Holy shit. The show.
Yeah.
It's fucking just crazier and crazier.
Very good.
Yeah. I think there's only two episodes left, so we got to get into Torunaga's plan. Is that any more clear to you now?
No, but he's definitely, now everybody on his hip that he's got a plan. No one wants to see what it is.
Yeah, this show is great. There's another.
Like, what do you think his plan is?
I don't know. He's going to walk right in. He's there. I don't know. He's there. He's setting everybody up. I think everything that he's mostly done is on purpose to get people feeling a certain way.
So check this out. So this guy, Torunaga, they got to bring him before like the bad guy. The bad guy's got him outnumbered or whatever, got him basically captured. And his friend is trying to tell him to not go in, we don't all want to go in with you and get charged with you. We have to like fight. He says no. And so the guy's like, well, then if you don't do that, I'm going to kill myself. And he's like, all right, do it.
Yes.
And so like his friend kills himself because he doesn't want to, he has a plan. He doesn't want to derail it. And
but was that part of the plan? I don't know.
If that is, that is crazy because he has to show everybody that he's going to surrender himself.
Yeah. Well, he says the line, he needs Osaka to know that he is at the bottom, that he is defeated. So right before that, the other generals, if you notice, were going to kill themselves. And then Hiramatsu says, no, I'll do it. And then his fucking son has to finish him off, which was just horrific. And Haruki Sanada's acting in this scene is amazing because you could see the conflict on his face. Tears are up. But I think Torinaga's plan was actually to have let the generals kill themselves. So Osaka hears this, but I think things went bad. And he called his bluff, and then when he just goes, then just die. I was like, what the fuck is happening?
I feel like he's playing possum. He's pretending to be sick.
Yes.
He's pretending to be weak. And when he gets in there, he's going to fuck him up.
Absolutely. Everything he's done is on purpose. He's faking the cough and the sickness. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But did he plan for his kid to die? I mean, the kid bought him 49 days.
Yeah.
He bought him time. Does he get another 49 days?
No, I think he used that to his advantage.
So it's so fucking great. I can't wait for they're going to do Crimson Sky. I think he still might do it. Now I think he still might do it. John Blackthorne is great going Crimson fucking bullshit. No,
I think Crimson
bullshit.
Sky is just a red herring. I think it's okay. Like he wants to get in front of those guys and he's just going to fucking kill him himself.
Yeah.
Because he is a badass.
Oh my God. Yeah. He's great. It's great. Great show. Instead of watching Fallout, I got sucked into this show new on Netflix called Ripley the retelling of The Talented Mr. Ripley, the Ripley novels. Great movie. We reviewed the movie. This one stars Andrew Scott, who's Moriarty in the Sherlock Holmes movies, and he's been in a bunch of things. Andrew Scott playing Tom Ripley, Dakota Fanning as the girlfriend Marge, and this guy, Johnny Flynn, as Dickie Greenleaf. And it's set in the 60s. The whole thing is in black and white. It's beautifully shot. And it's essentially the movie, just slower.
So they were in Italy having a holiday?
Yeah, a lot of Italy, Amalfi Coast, Rome, lots of cities, but all in black and white. But the fucking sets, the cars, the old-timey shit, you got typewriters. He's doing like mail fraud.
They got typewriters.
Typewriters and like the phone. They just got a phone in this little place he stays in Italy. And you just watch Tom become more and more psychotic and psychopath, like more of a psychopath, and he fucking kills people. And you're like, how are you going to fucking cover this up now, Tom? Come on, Ripley. It's really good as he slowly like takes over Dickie Greenleaf's identity, which that's so far it follows in the movie. So I've watched like the first 5 episodes out of 8. I don't know. I liked it. I like the mood.
You watch a lot of shit.
And then the last thing before I saw Civil War, I was like, I'd never watched Ex Machina from 2015.
Great movie.
Oh, wow.
This guy, again, Alex Garland, ahead of his time. This movie is about essentially an AI robot and a scientist who lives remote, who kind of tricks a programmer to come stay with him. And he wants him to do like a Turing test, which is the test to prove if AI is sentient. And it's essentially, Oscar Isaac is in it, and Alicia Vikander plays the robot. Essentially, it's just like three people talking the whole time. And then it ends with a crazy ending. And it's really good. And it's so ahead of its time. There are robots like that robot now, I believe.
But like, I think that, first of all, she's manipulating him in this great way.
Yes.
And it's very riveting because even though it's just talking,
it's just three people talking.
It is very compelling because you're like, oh, is this thing really sentient?
Yes. It's all about what it
is. This thing know like how to lie. Yeah. Does this thing know how to do this and that? So it is very compelling when you watch.
Very good. It's very well shot. Yeah, that's, you got to watch Ex Machina. I'm surprised it took me so long to watch it. It's fucking great.
Yeah.
Anyways, next week, what are we doing, fellas? Rebel Moon Part 2 on Netflix?
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to watch some
Zack
Snyder
shit. We're going to get Snyderized.
We're going to get Snyder-faced.
Yes.
It's going to be disappointing. Just saying here. Expectations. Looks cool. It's disappointing.
We've seen enough of this movie to know that we don't want to watch any more of it.
Maybe he'll surprise us this time. What do you think? What are the odds?
Not a chance.
No? Zero?
No. He can't help himself.
No, he can't. He really can't. But at least we'll get to see a robot fuck some shit up. Finally.
I'm waiting to see the Snyder cuts of these movies.
Oh, and then in August, you'll have to waste another 12 hours watching the R-rated uncut versions of these movies. That
right.
I read more interviews where he's like, like some of the lines are the same, but he just uses another take of shooting. So it's like a completely different footage, even with the same lines.
He's just an asshole.
It sounds unnecessary.
He's got a lot of time on his hands.
And you're wasting my time.
He's just an egomaniac.
Why don't you just make the one movie, you motherfucker? Why are you going to make me sit through a fucking cut version?
Why are we making variations of your movie with a studio that's giving you carte blanche to do what you want?
This stunt is old and worn out. Anyways, that's what we'll be talking about.
He is so stuck on the fandom that he created for his Justice League movie.
Yeah.
That he wants to somehow recreate that. But that was such a moment in time.
Yeah.
That's like people trying to recreate Barbenheimer. Like it's just things happen and moments happen and it's just that moment. And if you try to recreate something that organically happened, it never works. And he's trying to do that and he doesn't understand.
Plus it's obvious, right? Like, who are you fooling? It doesn't make sense. Yeah, you're absolutely right. It was the time and that's done.
Organic. That's
300 was his peak and now everything else is terrible.
And with that, we are going to finish up. Ruggs, where can the listener find you?
At Rugboy Show on X. Come follow me. I have like 3 followers.
Oh, we need to get Ruggs more followers in his new home.
I had like 500-600 before.
Where did all those people go?
I don't know.
Get Elisa Jordana to follow you.
Yeah.
To follow you.
Not a chance.
Anthony, where can the listener find you?
They can find me giving you shit for not booking a place in New York. Because
I'll get to it.
Jock and Nerd are going to New York for some convention. You heard it here first, and Imran's going to... I'm making Imran take some responsibility and book it. Because it's not like he has anything else to do other than and edit the entire fucking show.
Yes, every week and come up with all the notes. Do we want to to announce our plans?
Shit, I mean, I don't know how many listeners we have in New York, but sure.
Yeah. Well... Look, you know, Bilotti did that Kaiju Brooklyn one day.
He's doing another one.
Last year, listener, he came on, he talked about it. He's doing another one June 1st. And I think we're going to go out there.
I think we might get out there.
I think we're going to go out there, say hi, hang out. It should be fun. Haven't been to New York in like 20 years. And the last time I was in New York, I don't remember a lot of it. It was college. So it's going to be fun. We'll give you some... Maybe we'll record something out there, but that's the plan. Anyways, thanks for listening this week to the Jock and Nerd Podcast. My name is Imran.
My name's Anthony.
He's the jock.
He's a nerd.
We'll peep you next time.
I fucking loved it. Thing, I offered you a chance to be a cop, and you blew it.
Get your hand off my penis.
Get your hand off my penis. Yes.
I see that you know your judo well.
Jock and Nerd.